Welcome back to Not a Single Bother podcast with me, Aislinn Dowling. Hope everyone is well, and I apologise for the nasally voice that's coming out of my mouth right now. I have a head cold, so apologies, there's nothing I can do about that. Hope everyone's well, hope everyone's having a lovely weekend. Happy St. Patrick's weekend, actually. I hope everyone's not too hungover from all the celebrations. By the time this episode comes out, you'll probably be absolutely hanging. But I hope everyone enjoyed it nonetheless. I actually didn't even celebrate it. I feel guilty or something that I didn't celebrate it, but I just wasn't feeling well at all. And I just knew if I went out on a session, that would just be the end of me and I would get worse. So I just had to have a bit of willpower, even though the FOMO was real. The FOMO was absolutely real. It looked like really good crack in and around the rocks there. So I hope everyone had a good time here and at home and wherever you were. Thank you so much for all the support and responses that I got from the last episode with the lovely AOK Nutrition, Aisling Fox. Everyone was just as surprised as I was about a lot of the things that she talked about in that episode. So I'm glad that everyone is super informed now and knows all this information that should be known anyways. So if you haven't listened to that one, check that one out. Also, since I was last talking to you on the last episode, I have set up a Ko-fi account, which is K-O-F-I, Ko-fi, spelled that way, which is basically where, if you like my podcast and my content, then you can donate me the price of a Ko-fi. Basically, that's all it is. But it's completely optional. And I felt weird like doing this for lots of different reasons. But at the same time, I put a lot of time and effort into what I do. And I also said at the start of this year that I wanted to do this like full time. So I just needed to start like stop acting like things are just going to fall into my lap and just make a few adjustments. So I said, why not? I've seen other people doing it. And I just thought, look, the option is there. If you're not interested, lads, no worries, you can keep listening for free. That's absolutely grand. It's just an option. If you enjoy my content, if you enjoy what I do, then the option is there. You can do it once off, you can do it monthly, or as I said, you can just ignore it. But yeah, so that is there. I'm going to leave that link in the like description of this episode and in the description of the podcast itself. So if you would like to, it's there. And thank you so much to the people that have already contributed. It's so generous and it really, really doesn't go unnoticed. And I've read all of your lovely little comments as well on the Ko-fi page. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I really, really appreciate it. So on this episode of the podcast, I have been chatting with the absolutely inspirational, lovely, lovely person, Martine Dines, who some people might already know who she is, especially if you're Irish living in Australia, specifically Sydney, I suppose. You surely would have heard of her at this stage. She unfortunately was diagnosed with breast cancer back in June, I think it was, and since then she's been documenting her journey. She has thankfully rang the bell and completed her chemotherapy and then received PET scan results of where she got the all clear. And since last chatting to her, or since I recorded this podcast on Monday last, she has actually completed all of her active treatment. So she's doing super, super well, but has documented the whole journey, which included a lot of ups and downs and struggles of trying to get her parents over here in the height of COVID. So yeah, she's just honestly such an angel, and so is her fiance Sean. I don't know, the two of them are just such a cute couple. Like, I don't even know them like in person, like I've never spoken to them in person, but I just have like a weird little obsession with the two of them. Obsession's not really the right word. Like, I don't know, they just seem to be two really genuine, down-to-earth, kind-hearted people. And it's really nice to watch, and it's so good that the news has been good so far. And it's absolutely amazing that she's decided to document her journey, because she's been helping so many people along the way just through loads of different ways. But yeah, it was so, so lovely to chat to her, so I'm really excited for you to listen to this one. And yeah, I may as well just go straight into it now, and I hope you enjoy it. And as always, rate the podcast on, you can rate it on Apple Podcasts and now on Spotify. You can leave a little review. Sorry, I'm so stuffy. I'm actually so sorry. This sounds horrible, I'd say. You can also leave a review on Apple Podcasts.
Before I go straight into things, this episode is proudly sponsored by FM Fragrance Parlor, which is run by the lovely Mary Timoney. Mary is based here in Sydney, where she sells designer-inspired fragrances, but she also has home and body fragrance, hair, skin, makeup, and even cleaning products. It's your one-stop shop for men, women, and unisex. Although Mary is based here in Sydney, she ships all over Australia, as well as Ireland and the UK. I personally love her Flower Bomb-inspired fragrance and the Sea-inspired fragrance. They are absolutely amazing. They're so affordable and I literally carry them wherever I go. You can check out all her amazing products on Instagram at FM Fragrance Parlor and just send her a little message. Mary is so lovely. She's such a little sweetheart and is always so appreciative of every bit of support. So make sure to check out her business on Instagram. Also, if you have any questions or you want to try a new scent, Mary is always so happy to send you a little tester with your purchase. Thank you so much to FM Fragrance Parlor for sponsoring this episode. So welcome to the podcast, Martine. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I suppose before we go into like your diagnosis and everything like that, and I know most people here in Australia will, or the Irish community over here will have an idea of who you are and your story, especially everyone in Sydney. But for people that don't know you or haven't heard your story, just tell people a bit about yourself before your diagnosis even.
Yeah, so I came to Australia when I was 22. Gosh, it's like, it feels like a lifetime ago, but
yeah.
I was 22 when I came, originally from Belfast, sorry, and studied in Jordanstown at University of Ulster in business studies, and just thought to myself, there's no jobs in Ireland, the weather is awful, I'm not cut out for all this rain, so I wanted to go somewhere abroad, and I suppose Australia was very appealing, just given that there's a lot of opportunity, there was a couple of people here I knew from home, the weather was better, and I just knew that you could make a career and a better life for yourself, so moved out then, done the whole traffic controlling, farm work, all that jazz, and then found myself in a corporate office, which gave me ability to stay with my visa, which I'm very thankful for. So I'm now currently a permanent resident waiting to get my test for my citizenship. And
unreal.
And live in eastern suburbs with all the other Irish.
Yeah. And yourself, and you came over with Sean, am I right? Have you been together or did you meet over here?
No, Sean and I were only friends at home. It's a bit of a crazy story, but we were just friends at home. I'd met him when I had a couple of different leaving parties and stuff, and he was friends of friends, and he was always there, always out. Don't want to say he was always out partying, because that's not him. Yeah. He can't drink at all. And met him for a couple of leaving parties, and then I came here in April, and he came out 6 months later, and then we got together as soon as he got here. It was just, we didn't even plan it. It was just kind of natural, the way it kind of happened, which just shows me a bit like, we were always meant to be together, because I couldn't have asked for a better partner over, especially the last year, through the whole cancer diagnosis and treatment and all that. So I'd say soulmates for sure.
Aww.
As cheesy as it sounds.
And so how long is it that you've actually been here? So you came here when you were 22.
Yeah, 22. So it's 8 years now.
Eight years. Mad.
Yeah,
I'd say it only feels like it doesn't even feel like 8 years. I know it doesn't feel like four for me anyways.
No, I think whenever everyone comes to Australia, you feel like you're in Neverland.
Yeah, everyone says that.
You grow up in certain ways. For example, like, you have to move out on your own. You have to pay your bills. You have to manage your finances. You have to get a job, get a visa.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of how you perceive yourself, I don't feel like I've aged in terms of, I don't know, maybe maturity, because I had to be mature when I came.
Yeah.
Obviously, priorities are a bit different now.
Uh-huh.
but I feel like it's gone in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, same. Honestly, it's crazy. I feel the exact same as you in terms of all those different aspects. So when were you first diagnosed?
So I found lumps at the end of May when we went on holiday to Hamilton Island, celebrating what was meant to be our second wedding, our second wedding that we had planned and had to cancel because of COVID.
Yeah.
So it was on the 27th, I found the lumps on holiday. By the 5th of June, I had been diagnosed with breast cancer.
Okay.
So it's been, 10 months since then?
Right.
Yeah.
And so you were in Hamilton Island, and tell us how you came about, like, finding the lumps on your breast. Like, was that a usual thing that you would do, checking your breasts, or what was going on?
I would say no. I've never been, like, a regular checker. Like, never... You know, I'd never really heard of check on the first either, like first of the month, check your breasts. I have known people who've had breast cancer. So my grandmother actually had breast cancer on my mother's side and died when she was 47. So I never actually got to meet her.
Okay.
I know my mom would always go for mammograms. And funny enough, there was a couple of years ago where I went for one of my pap smears, and the doctor at the time, she's absolutely lovely lady. She's not my current doctor now, but she asked me, had I checked myself?
Mm-hmm.
My breasts or my body for lumps, and I'd said no, and she actually showed me how to check myself. However, when we were in Hamilton Island, I think somebody was looking down on me to find the lumps, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think we're always running in a rat race in Sydney. You're always working hard, you know, play hard, out at the beach, out with friends. It's very social. And for some reason that day in Hamilton Island, we would always be quite active in our holidays anyway, go for a hike, go for a snorkel, paddleboard, whatever it may be. That day was very chilled, very relaxed, and we spent maybe 2 hours or so just in the hotel room, deciding whether we wanted to do this hotel, this helicopter ride.
Yeah.
And it was when I was laying on the bed, that's when I had found the two lumps in my right breast. And you never ever think it's going to be cancerous. You just think it's a cyst or...
Yeah.
Just tissue. And I have small breasts, so I think I would always think, oh, if there was something in my breast, I would know about it, because there, you know, there's not much tissue there to go find something. One of the lumps was quite prominent, and the other lump was a bit deep inside. You had to really like push in to feel it.
Okay.
So yeah, that's when I'd found them.
And how big would you describe the lumps to be?
So they, like medical, after all the examinations, they were just under 2 centimeters.
Mm-hmm.
So one was 18 millimeters, the other was 16, and I actually found a third, which was 11 millimeters. So all under 2 centimeters. I would say one felt a bit more like a cyst, like on the surface, you know, kind of like an almond, maybe.
Right.
Not like a bit bigger than like an almond size.
Yeah.
The other one that was quite deep in, that felt humongous to me.
Right, okay.
And without going into a lot of details about breasts and how they feel, but you know when you grow up and you start to develop your breasts, you get like those hard lumps like around where your nipples are.
Yeah.
If you ever push in, like I always remember growing up and you would feel that in your breast, you'd be like, God, like this is me hitting puberty here. Like this is how to like develop and grow. So I actually thought it was that, because my boobs are so small. I thought, God, that must be, you know, all the stuff that you've got behind your milk ducts and your whatever. I thought that's what that was inside. But because it did feel quite big and quite close to my chest. So that one was a bit bigger.
And when you felt the lumps, like in that moment when you were lying down on the bed, like what was going through your mind and what did you say to Sean?
So he was actually in the bathroom at the time, and I just remember going back and forth and feeling both breasts and comparing them, just laying there on the bed. And then I jumped up and felt them again. I was like, yeah, they're definitely there. No, they're definitely there. I can definitely feel them.
Yeah.
And then I went with Sean into the bathroom and I says, right, am I feeling something or can you feel this? And he felt them. And we just said in that moment, he just says to me, yes, I can feel them. I could tell by the look in his eyes, he was like shit scared. But he just says, we'll go to the doctor on Monday. And I was like, right, okay, we'll go on Monday. And I just tried to push it out of my mind. He finally decided we would do the helicopter ride at that stage. So I was like, right, let's just enjoy the rest of the day. It was a Saturday. We were flying home on the Sunday. And we just, I literally did put it to the back of my mind.
Yeah.
Enjoyed the helicopter ride, then we had a lovely meal on the last day. And I remember we were in the airport waiting to leave Hamilton Island, and I just went onto the hot doc app on my phone where I would go my medical appointments.
Yeah.
And booked an appointment in with a doctor the next day and didn't think about it. There was no hesitation. And again, that's something that I would always put off, because in the back of my mind, I thought, right, I've been off on annual leave for like 6 days at this stage. And I'm a bit of a play by the rules girl. Like, I hate breaking rules. Like, can't work from home the day after a holiday. So I was actually quite shocked that I did book the appointment.
Yeah.
Now looking back, reflecting on it, because I would normally be like, oh, I'll go into work on Monday, I'll try and work from home on Tuesday, and I'll book it in then.
Yeah.
But I booked the appointment right away at that stage.
And in the back of your mind, like, did you have like a gut feeling that you were going to be getting bad news? If that's the way that you were, like, you were planning on going on Monday, you knew you had to go. Did you have like a gut feeling?
My gut was telling me it was going to be okay.
Right.
To be honest. On that, as soon as I booked that appointment, and I remember going to the doctor, going in, she says, yeah, what can I help you with? Or, you know, how's things getting on? She's really personal. Like, she'd be like, oh, the last time you were here, such and such, and we talk about that. And so what can I do for you today?
Mm-hmm.
And I says, oh, I've got two lumps. I found two lumps in my boob. I want you, can you just have a check and feel them? So there you go. Take off your top, get on the bed. And she was feeling my breast. She's like, yep, that's one there. Yep, yep, that's one there. Yep. And she just stood up, checked both breasts under your arms as well, because that's all part of your breast tissue. And she just said, look, it's probably benign, but I'm going to book a scan for you.
Okay.
But in my head, I was like, right, she's booking a scan. She's very precautious, which is great. I think over here, they're just on the ball in terms of the medical side of things. Like, I needed a scan. She booked me a scan literally for 20 minutes time. So I just had to leave the clinic and walk up to the Spectrum on Belmore Road on Silver Street.
Yeah.
And it was then when I was in the scan, I was like, my tummy started turning, because the nurse, or the, I don't know what they're called, the therapist, she kept going back and forth over these lumps, and she kept taking measurements, and then she called her colleague in, and I thought to myself, right, why are they going back and forth over these lumps?
Yeah.
And then my fears were heightened more. The next day, the doctor called and says, I've got your ultrasound. I do want you to go back today for a mammogram and a biopsy. And I just thought, oh God, this must not be good.
Mm-hmm.
If they're asking, I know a mammogram is used to detect cancer in breasts. And in my head, I was going, well, why am I going for a mammogram? Like, surely it's not cancer. I'm only 29.
Yeah.
I live a very healthy lifestyle. I exercise. I, you know, I'm a good person. Like, surely it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Then fast forward the next day, I just remember getting the mammogram. And it's like, it's uncomfortable. It is uncomfortable for a couple of seconds, but it's just a couple of seconds. Like, people should not be afraid to go. I actually had a laugh with the nurse, because she, in the mammogram, there's different sizes. And she pulled out this tray, which was, should have like suited my breast size.
Yeah.
And I stood beside the machine, and she was like pulling and pulling and pulling my body to try and put as much flesh into the mammogram machine. And then she's like, oh, hold on a second. And she had to go and get like a smaller tray. And we were laughing about how small the tray was. Small. And she's literally pulling all my back fat into the machine. And she's like, oh, can we get any more? And I was like, literally, my whole body's going to be in this machine. Like, that's all I've got. That's all the booze that you've got. So it's got to make it work.
Yeah.
It was when we were doing the biopsy then, because it's quite, that's quite sore, because they're putting a needle into your body and pulling cells out of your body.
Right.
And I just remember lying there getting the biopsy, and I just remember the tears rolling down my face.
Oh.
And the nurse put her hand on my shoulder, and she's like, you're doing brilliant. You're doing really well. You know, it shouldn't be too long more. And they kept taking more samples and more samples and more samples. And then, when I went to pay, at this stage, I literally couldn't even see. And I felt a bit insecure as well, because in the same venue, there's people there who are getting scans because they're having babies, or, you know, they're they're getting clear results. So there's like, there's mixed emotions. There was me really upset, thinking the worst in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But then people beside me who are so happy because their baby is got a lovely, healthy heartbeat. And it was just, it just felt really bizarre. Like, it was just a real bizarre scenario. And I remember I had to walk away from the desk because I couldn't pay, because I had to pay, you had to pay for your scans and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I left the lady at the desk waiting for me to pay. I think it was something like $1,400 or something for just that day. And then I finally came back and composed myself and paid. And then I just tried to forget about it. And between, that was on the Tuesday. So between Tuesday and the Saturday, that's when I was going to get my results. I just kept saying over and over and over in my head, I'm brave.
Yeah.
The lumps are benign and everything's okay. So like, brave and benign. I'm brave and the lumps are benign.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept saying it over to myself, because I'm a big believer in terms of like your mantra, you know, setting your intentions, you know, writing things down. And in my head I was like, if I do this, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
But lo and behold, on Saturday it wasn't. It was the complete opposite.
And how do they actually deliver that information to you? Did you have to go into the office, I presume, like face to face? How do they, what's that phone call like?
Yeah, into the clinics, into the doctor. So obviously Sean came with me to the hospital, or the doctor, sorry, and we were waiting in the reception, and she just says, yeah, come on in, Martine. Just before that, she called, I got there a bit early, and she'd called someone in ahead of me, and she looked down into the waiting room, and she smiled, and she says, hi, like hi. So I thought, God, she's in a great mood, like, it must be all right. And I looked at Sean at that second, and I was like, I think it's going to be okay. I think it's going to be okay. And then it was my turn to go in. She came in, she says, Martine, Sean, come on in. And as soon as we walked in, I didn't even have a chance to sit down when she started talking. We were walking in and she just says, look, I'm really sorry, it's bad news, it's cancerous. And I just remember, like, the whole room was just spinning. I was like, I just couldn't believe it. I just wanted her to keep, I couldn't say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just looked at her, and you know when you look someone right in the eye and you just want to look through their soul, and you want to be like, say something different.
Yeah.
Like, tell me that. Yeah. Tell me something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the best way that she could have given me the news, because there was no messing around. It was, I'm really sorry, bad news, it's cancerous. Rather than saying, look, the results come back, blah, blah, blah. So I think she delivered it in such a good way, and she let me have my time to scream and cry, and you know, Sean was with me holding my hand, and I don't know how doctors do it, you know, give those bad results. Looking back now, it must have been horrific for her and anybody else in the clinic, because I was screaming all over the place. I was literally inconsolable. It's like a hyena, high pitch. And I wouldn't really be a crier as much, but I just remember the emotions were just so intense. And in that moment, I just wanted the ground to swallow me up.
Yeah. Like, that's, it's not like you can even compare it to something else. Like, it's not anything that you've ever experienced before. So you were never going to know how you were going to react. And so in terms of stages, what stage was your cancer at when you found it?
So they just told me that it was early breast cancer. The cancer was, in terms of the aggressiveness, was grade 3. So what they do is they take the cells from my mastectomy and look at it under a microscope, and they can see how, basically how fast the cells are moving. So they can grade it a grade 3. And the fact that I had 3 tumors all under 2 centimeters, and 1 lymph node impacted, meaning it spread to 1 lymph node. They call that invasive, meaning the cancer is moving.
Okay.
So you can have non-invasive and invasive.
Mm-hmm.
So my cancer was moving, which meant that I was at high risk of the cancer spreading to, you know, your organs or whatever. But they just classified as early breast cancer.
Okay. And is your doctor, so you're sitting there and she's initially told you that it's cancerous, and then she has to give you all this information as well in that.
Yeah, so she told me that, she told me it was breast cancer. I'm trying to recall back. So she didn't give me much more information there and then. I was asking questions like, yeah. I was asking, looking back now, I was asking questions like, am I going to die? How long am I going to live for? You know, am I going to lose my hair?
Mm-hmm.
What's my life expectancy? I was asking all these really hard questions to her. And obviously she didn't really know. All she knew was it was breast cancer and that was it. We obviously had to do more tests to find out how far and aggressive it was.
Yeah.
But what she did do was amazing. She gave me a website to look at and she says, please don't look at any other website. Don't look at any other forum. Just look at this website. And it was the Mayo Clinic website.
Right, okay.
And she said, just use this as a point of reference. If you have a question or if you want to look up something, use this website. Because I think the internet's just quite a dark.
Definitely.
So you can fall, yeah, you can fall down a dark hole.
Yeah.
And I did find myself falling down a dark hole where, you know, there's a lot of Facebook groups, there's a lot of networking groups that you can join on Instagram. You know, you can follow people on Instagram as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I just felt like every time I was on one of those pages, I remember specifically a particular page where every time someone passes away with breast cancer, they put up angel wings and they say RIP to X, whoever it may be, gain their angel wings, rest in peace, may they find love and peace in their hearts or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And every day I was seeing those on my phone and I just thought, this is not helping me yeah. at all. This is what the doctor was talking about.
Yeah.
I muted all of those forums and I just use them now. If I ever have a question, I'll go on and search. If I have a question, something silly like hair growth. So like last week I put up a post, please someone tell me my hair is all going to grow back and I don't have alopecia because I had this weird bald spot at the top of my head. Like that's the stuff I would use the forum for, but anything medical I would always use a registered breast cancer website
yeah.
or that clinic website.
Mm-hmm.
So he just says, right, this is obviously we had that conversation, use yeah. this website. And she had pre-organized a meeting for me in the cancer clinic on the Wednesday.
Okay.
So I'd seen her on the Saturday and I was straight into the cancer clinic on the Wednesday. And then that was like, once I had that appointment on the Wednesday, it was all systems go. There was literally no time to breathe.
Right, okay. And at what point then did you decide to document your whole journey? And why?
So I think it was from... God, can you hear my bird?
Yeah.
A little thing. Sorry, no, we've adopted this bird, Sean found it.
I've seen on your stories, yeah, so cute.
Oh, he is cute, but he's also got a good set of lungs on him.
Oh, it sounded like a cat there for a second.
So I had that meeting on the Wednesday, and I remember sitting there thinking, you know, how bad this is going to be. But I'm a firm believer of, you know, just make do with what you've got. And I'm always about helping other people. So yeah. like, you know, good turns, good deeds, all of that. And I just thought to myself, you know, if someone else in my position in 10 years' time was to go through exactly what I've gone through, I know I'm going to be a survivor. I know I'm going to have a rough couple of months ahead, but I know that I'm going to live to tell the tale. And this all goes back to your mantra and your intentions and saying things out loud.
Yeah.
I was saying to myself, I'm going to be a survivor and I'm going to help people because I kind of, not that I struggled to connect with people because so many people have reached out to me and I've made so many friends yeah. through social media who've also gone through breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And they helped me so much. And I just thought, if they've helped me, they've just finished their treatment or they're still going through their treatment, I want to do the same and help others.
Yeah.
So I think once I had that appointment on the Wednesday, I was thinking about it during when I was in the waiting room. And then when I came out, I just thought, I just have to help as many people as possible.
Yeah, and that's obviously not even an easy thing to do. Like, it is obviously a massive decision to start documenting something that's going to be so personal for you. You're going to be showing a lot of raw moments in your life. So it's amazing that you were even able to do that. And I'm sure you're helping so many people, even if it's just, you know, making people go and get their breast checks. Like, every little bit is massive, really. It's not even a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
So I'll talk about like the different treatments and stuff in a little bit. But before that, just in terms of like who you had around you, obviously you had Sean, and then obviously you wanted your parents to come over. And just talk to us about the difficulty that you had at that time trying to get your parents over here during the height of COVID.
Yeah, so I suppose when you're out here, like, your friends do become your family. So yeah. I had, you know, all my friends here that are like my family.
Mm-hmm.
But I think every girl and every boy needs their parents, or needs their guardians, or needs someone a bit more closer to them to help them through such a tough time.
Of course.
And it was this with my parents. They wanted to be here with me.
Yeah.
So I was chatting to a couple of these girls who were living in Australia who'd had breast cancer or currently going through treatment, and asked them the question first, you know, have you tried to get your parents here? What's the process look like? I was really disheartened when two of them had said, look, we've been denied so many times. And I just thought, I can't, like, how inhumane is this to be denied your parents to come to Australia? So I was also in touch with the Irish Support Agency.
Yeah.
And they gave me loads of information as well, which was really, really helpful. You know, this is the link that you need. This is the type of information you want to put in. This is the documents that you need to get.
Mm-hmm.
And then using also like Facebook, they had a page up there called Parents Aren't Immediate Family, because that was the whole issue. Yeah. Your parents weren't considered immediate family.
Insane. Like, excuse me? Yeah.
My mother gave birth to me. Yeah. Like, how is she not my immediate family?
No, I remember here, like, at the time I heard that, and me and the girls at work were talking about it, and we were like, who is your immediate family if your parents aren't your immediate family? Like, it just made absolutely no sense.
No sense at all. So, that was extra stress that I didn't need, and Sean didn't need, and my parents didn't need. And it was just accumulating so many documents. I'm the type of person as well that I always try and do things by myself before I would ask for help,
mm-hmm.
because I don't like people out. And not that I would be putting people out because they obviously wanted to help, but in my head I was like, gosh, I wonder if I need my family here. Like, could I do this by myself? You know, and then obviously I came to realize that I do need my parents here. But then when it came to asking for help from politicians, from the medical team, from doctors and nurses, you just kind of have to grow a backbone and be a brass neck and just say, I need this document.
Yeah.
I need you to say X, Y, and Z. Can you send it to me as soon as possible? And to me, I thought I was coming across quite arrogant and rude, like, I need this, you need to do this for me. But if I didn't do it, my parents wouldn't have got here. So I'm really glad that I did do it.
Of course.
There was one night Sean and I were on the laptop, both a laptop each. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. I never see two o'clocks on the clock ever because I'm always sleeping. Yeah. I'm always like, stay up late. And I was like, oh my god, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, we're still sitting here trying to get this done. But it was the only time we had to speak to people at home. Speak to the politicians at home. They were calling favors with other people, and everyone, in terms of like social media, the power of social media was incredible, because people were messaging saying, I know X, Y, and Z in this party, I know X, Y, and Z that work in the government, work mm-hmm. in the Irish embassy. And it was just about calling favors from people.
Yeah.
And I believe that was the power of social media, the noise that we made on you know, even the media channels,
mm-hmm.
that was how we were able to get the visa. And I'm truly grateful for everybody who had helped.
Yeah, I remember it was massive at the time, but like, everybody felt so strongly about it. Which obviously, like, it was just ridiculous that, you know, that they wouldn't be able to come over here in the first place. And it wasn't even just you, you were just an example of all these different people who were going through different types of experiences, but similar ones to yours, like people being kept apart for no reason, really. I mean, obviously I know the reason, but it just wasn't really valid enough, really. But what was the day like for you when you got the news that their exemption was granted?
I woke up normal time, I think it was 5:30, and never ever would I wake up and look at my emails. I'm not that type of person. I would get up, you know, wash your face, brush your teeth, get ready, go for a walk, and then I would look at my phone. And we had just submitted it that night. So that night we were up to like whatever clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. I submitted all the documents, went to bed, woke up with only a couple of hours sleep, and went straight to my emails, and all I could see was exempt. Oh, and I remember looking at it going, but what does exempt mean? Like, yeah. I had like a complete blonde moment where I just, everything, all the knowledge in my head went out the window, and I was like, what does exempt mean? Does that mean they're exempt from getting the exemption? Or does that mean they're exempt from the roof? Like, what does it mean? And it said both parents were exempt because I was prepared for only one parent to get the exemption.
Oh my God.
Because they told me that, you know, don't keep all your hopes up for your two parents to get here.
Yeah.
And my God, it was just... it was the little pickup that I needed because I had previously just got bad news that my cancer had spread to the lymph nodes.
Yeah.
And it was going from the lowest of the low to the highest of the high. And I just thought, oh my God, my parents are coming. Like, they're going to be here with me to go through this. How amazing is that?
Yeah. Oh my God. And how long had it actually been since you had seen them anyways?
Two years, yeah.
Oh my God. That must have honestly been amazing when they were able to come over, especially in such horrible circumstances. And how much that must have made the biggest difference, really, having them here during everything.
Oh, the biggest difference. Like, things that I wouldn't even think about, you know, were, I was thinking, you know, I'm going to be in bed sleeping or whatever, but the difference it made to just your home, like, there's a bit more noise.
Mm-hmm.
It's not set. When I was in bed for days upon end, you know, Sean was obviously here. It was company for Sean as well. You know, mommy would get up and do the cleaning. Daddy would be there with all the jokes and, you know, big arms around you when you need it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just amazing. And I honestly don't know if I would have got through the last couple of months without them here, because it's just, you just need your parents sometimes.
Of course.
You're never too old to need a cuddle or a hug. And I feel like the whole of Coogee knew my parents because everyone was dying to see their parents. And they were, my mum and my daddy saying, oh, I just want a hug. Can I have a mummy hug? Can I have a daddy hug or a cuddle? So I think they were great for me, but it was also great for everybody in Coogee. Like, everyone was just coming up and hugging them. It was amazing.
Oh,
absolutely amazing.
So cute, like. And just going back to your treatments now, what treatments were presented to you and what was the first initial thing that you had to do?
So it was literally, as soon as I had that meeting, it was all systems go at the cancer clinic. So the first surgery I had was a mastectomy and a reconstruction.
Okay.
Where they take the tissue away, tested, found out it was in my lymph nodes. So I had to go in for more surgery where they took out all of my lymph nodes under my right arm. And then that tissue is tested. We found out that there was just one lymph node impacted with cancer, which was amazing news. Then after that, I went through IVF. So in terms of IVF, people are like, oh, why'd you do IVF? You're not having a baby. But part of IVF is harvesting your eggs.
Okay.
I had to inject myself for, I think it was 10 days in total. And then I had to go in for surgery to have my eggs removed, and they're chilling in the freezer in the hospital. The doctors hoped that I was going to get more eggs than what I did. I had 5 eggs in the end that were mature enough to freeze. So because of my age, they were expecting like maybe 19 eggs or so.
Okay.
But they think it was under a bit of stress. That's why I didn't have a lot of eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried to do another round of egg harvesting, which was another, like, injections every day, tablets every day. But my body just wasn't responding. So we had to just stop halfway through. And the reason they believe is that your body's just under so much stress. I've had 2 major surgeries. I've already went through 1 round of IVF. And that when your body's under stress and there's other things going on inside your body, like, it needs to heal.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that happens is your reproductive system shuts down. And that's exactly what was happening to me, which was really disheartening. The reason they offer that is because through chemotherapy, it actually kills off a lot of your eggs.
Okay.
just because of the drugs that are there. So yeah. They're hoping that I, you know, if I do want a family, that we can try naturally first. But if not, then I've got 5 eggs there as a backup that we could try.
Right.
So then after the IVF, I had another surgery to have a port inserted in my chest. And that's where I got all of my chemotherapy, was through that little device in my chest. And then I done 5 months of chemotherapy, which felt like it was never, I was never going to see the end of it. And of course, I rang the bell and I did finish it. Now I've got 1 week left of radiotherapy. So I have 28 sessions in total. And once that's finished, I'll have another surgery to have my port removed. And then later in the year, I'm going to have a second mastectomy and reconstruction on the left side to take off the other breast to avoid risk of reoccurrence. Sorry, not reoccurrence, of a new cancer growing in the left side.
And what was your reaction when you heard you needed to have your breasts removed? And I saw in one of your posts that you said that you were lucky to have had a reconstruction at the same time, which is amazing. But how long would women usually have to wait for reconstructions?
Well, in Australia, it's part of the mastectomy.
Okay.
You can choose to just stay flat-chested, or you can choose to have an implant. You know, I was thinking I'm in Australia because of the weather. I'm a beach bum. Like, I want to feel confident in a bikini.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I am quite young. Like, I do want to still have breasts there.
Yeah,
and
course.
Just feel, you know, normal. Mm-hmm. Not that not having breasts, you're not normal, but I just wanted to feel as much like me as possible.
Yeah.
To be honest, I couldn't wait for the surgery. I just wanted to get my breast off.
Yeah.
You can imagine, you've just been told you've got cancer, and all I could do was constantly put my hand in my breast and feel the lumps. And I was like, that is cancer right there. Yeah. That lump there that I'm holding, that's cancer. So in my head, I was like, the quicker it's off my body, it can't grow, it can't spread.
Yeah.
And getting rid of it. So I was delighted, absolutely delighted, when they said, you know, your surgery will be in, I think it was like 20 days. Are you prepared to have surgery in 20 days? I was like, yeah, I'll have it in 5 days. Like, if you can get in quicker, I will come in.
Yeah.
And then when they gave me the option for the reconstruction, we actually had a laugh with the surgeons about this. So we were standing in the room, and they have to examine your breasts to see what your breasts feel like, what size they might be, and what weight it might be.
Mm-hmm.
So I was standing there with no top on. I swear the whole of New South Wales Hospital has seen my breasts. I was standing there, and Sean was in the room. And of course, the surgeon, big, handsome English male, was like tall, dark, and handsome. Two of them were standing over me, touching my breast.
Yeah.
I just remember John, and he was like, oh my god, like, here we go again, everyone's feeling up your boobs, like. And I was standing there, and just to break the ice, I said to the, you know, the surgeon, my partner's asking, can you give me a double D? You know, he'd love a bit more to play with, like, laughing about it. And everybody was laughing, just to break the ice. But he said, he says, like, with all due respect, like, your breasts are quite small. I'm not sure if we'll have an implant in on time for your breasts, because they are quite small.
Right.
So I was prepared to possibly wake up flat-chested if there was no implant that suited me.
Yeah.
Or you can get another option, which is an expander, which is like, well, you wake up from the surgery, but your breasts will be flat, but they can actually put a needle into your breast and pump it up with fluid. So I was prepared to be flat or to have a breast.
Right.
But I know at home that's not the case for some people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because of the NHS, or if you're from the south, it's just part of the process where they just don't have either the money,
yes,
or the manpower,
yeah,
in terms of the surgeries to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was extremely lucky to have the reconstruction right away.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I think it's important for people to know, like, what the reality of treatment is like for people, because, like, it could be me, it could be somebody close to me that has to go through this at some point in life, and the same for everyone listening. So I think it's good for people to know what they could be in for. So what have some of the most difficult times in your treatment and things that you didn't expect?
I think everybody knows when you go through treatments, especially chemotherapy, that you're going to lose your hair.
Yeah.
Which is why I cut it short and I shaved it. But nothing prepares you for losing all your hair on your head. I think especially just being a female.
Yeah.
you know, we perceive females as having luxurious, you know, beautiful hair. It's part of, we see the hair part of a female. I had actually been growing my hair because we were meant to get married. So it was like quite long at that stage, you know, using all the products, all the expensive stuff to look after it. But you don't, nothing can really prepare you for losing your hair. I just remember it was falling out, like round, like scattered all over the place. And I actually sat, you know, the lint roller?
Yeah.
I just sat with a lint roller and just rolled my head back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And it was covered in hair. And I had maybe like four or five rolls. And every day I was just doing that. And we were sitting on the balcony. I just thought, this is driving me insane. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, why is it not just all fall out at once? Like, because it was just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I was a bit self-conscious and, you know, a bit paranoid. I thought I was leaving hair all over the apartment. So I remember going into the bathroom and whatever product was sitting in front of me, I grabbed it and I just started putting all this product on my head. And I was literally like clawing at my scalp, to try and like get all the hair out, which it wasn't helping in any way because my head was red raw. So I'd say definitely the hair loss was one of the hardest parts. For me, it's always, I've always been conscious of making others feel a certain way. So seeing my parents cry, seeing Sean cry, seeing everyone cry together, that was breaking my heart more than anything, because I just didn't want to upset anyone. I don't want people to have to, I don't want my parents to have to travel out here and live with me to help me through treatment. I just wish it was never happening.
Yeah.
That was definitely really hard. And I think just going through cancer treatment in a pandemic was, I hope nobody ever has to experience it. Like I just hope COVID's gone and no one ever has to go through with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, treatments on your own, going to appointments,
yeah.
On your own. There was a time, the lockdown kicked in when I was having my second surgery and Sean wasn't allowed in to see me in the hospital. And that was really hard as well. Going for PCRs every week. And when the border started opening around Christmas time, I remember queuing for like 4 or 5 hours waiting on a PCR. And I was told by the hospital, if I don't get a negative PCR, I'm not going to get my treatment. And I was just broken as a person. I was like, how is this? How can you do this? I actually called the hospital crying and so emotional, so upset. And I know the girl on the phone, the nurse on the phone, she was also really upset too.
Yeah.
She just says, I'm really sorry, but we can't give you treatment. And I just thought, this is effed up. Like, this is impossible.
Yeah.
So that was also really hard. And I think now I come into terms with what's happened because I actually have time to breathe now.
Yeah.
Time to actually just reflect. And I think I'm about to enter another challenging time where once your treatment is finished, you're constantly thinking of, but what if it's somewhere else? What if it's in my left breast? What if it's somewhere else? What if it comes back in 6 months?
Yeah.
So now I know that I now need to go and talk to more people now and talk to the counselors and all that about how I can stop those thoughts.
Yeah.
Because I know that they are upon me because I've had a couple of wobbles over the last week. Because people tend to think, you know, once you finish chemo, that's it, your hair's back, your eyelashes are back, and you're back to yourself. But this is where the, I suppose, psychological and mental challenges come in, mm-hmm. because it's always fear of, you know, I'm not getting treatment now, I'm not seeing nurses every day. So it's about trying to keep your mental health healthy.
Yeah.
And being conscious of what your thoughts are, what you're thinking about, and take things slowly. Like, don't jump back into work full time, don't jump back into training full time.
Mm-hmm.
Take things slowly to listen to your body.
Yeah. And during your treatments, what were the things that helped bring you happiness through it all?
I mean, waking up and going down to Coogee in the morning for sunrise is literally like, I'm so happily pleased. If I can get up, walk to Coogee for a coffee and get, you know, sunrise in and have chats with people, like, that's what I love looking forward to.
Yeah.
And it meant, you know, going to bed, I wasn't thinking about, oh, I've got another day tomorrow, another day closer to chemo, or you know, another day of being sick, in my head I thought, if I can get up and go for a coffee, it actually made me, you know, happy to go to bed, because I know I'm going up and doing something that I love the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So just walk, spending time with obviously friends and my family, having my parents here. I just thought, when, you know, when you move to Australia, you don't ever think that you'll have that opportunity to spend that amount of time with your parents.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we just made sure we're making memories. I recorded as much as I could on my phone, because I just would always look back. Even now my parents are gone, I look back at the videos.
Yeah.
Sean bitten my knee up. Or, you know, looking at footage of us going out for a coffee, and I'll just take a photo of mommy and daddy sitting there.
Yeah.
And it'll bring me back to memories.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think just, like, putting myself number one, like, knowing that I was doing everything possible to help me recover.
Yeah.
Was just making me appreciate life as well. But knowing that, you know, nothing was a chore, like going for a walk never seemed like it was a struggle, because I knew it was making me better. So I just tried to separate my mind and my body, to help me get over as many challenges as possible.
And for people that might be going through the same situation as you right now, what kind of advice would you give them?
The initial diagnosis is the worst part of it.
Okay.
Generally, hands down, telling your family, getting that diagnosis is the worst part, because it's the fear of the unknown. You don't know what's ahead of you. You know, someone can tell you, right, you're going to have 5 months of chemo, surgery, blah, 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 but you don't know exactly what that feels like, or how you're going to feel going through that treatment. So once you get over the diagnosis, and telling your family, and you literally go into action mode. It's like a pilot mode. I can't even describe it.
Mm-hmm.
You're just like, right, what's next? Right. Once we get this done, what's next? You're always looking ahead, because you're looking to prepare yourself.
Yeah.
When I say looking ahead, I don't want to be contradicting and say that you just focus on that day, because that is contradicting. But for example, when I was doing the chemotherapy, I thought, right, what am I doing today? Plan out my day.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to be in bed for maybe the majority of it. But what two things can I do to make myself feel better? And that could be having a shower, because on those down days where you're really sick and really bad, having a shower is like a real goal.
Yeah.
As funny as it may sound. Or, you know, I might lie in bed and mommy will give me a hand massage, or I'll try and get a walk around the block, or I'll feed Bruno, I'll feed my dog. Like, just having little goals like that will just keep you focused.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to bed knowing that you had a shower and you fed the dog yourself, well, then they're two great ticks to me. That's how I read, just little small wins.
Exactly, yeah, the small wins.
Yeah, and someone also advised me, they had also gone through a cancer treatment before. And the best bit of advice that they give me, which I think has really helped, is you need to separate your mind and your body. And this is getting a bit deep, but hear me out. If you separate your mind and your body has got the cancer, right? That is the part where the disease is. It's not in your mind. Yes, your body's going through chemotherapy. It's going to be sore. You're going to lose your hair, but your mind can be elsewhere. And I don't mean like sitting on Hawaii, you know, enjoying the sun, but separate your mind and think, right, my body's going through this, but my mind can be focused on something else. And that's where the little wins come into it.
Yeah.
And just remember that your mind and your mental health is extremely important. And if you can put your mind in a good position, your body may be breaking down inside, but as long as you've got a strong mind on your shoulders, it'll help you get through it all.
Mm-hmm. And what advice could you give to the loved ones of somebody going through treatment, like of ways that they can really help them and be there for them during it all?
I'd say hear them out, and just be a listening ear. Sometimes, obviously, everyone wants to help.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to do their turn to help in whatever way that may be. But let them feel their pain. Don't try and cover it up and say, such and such had breast cancer and they're okay. Look at them, they're okay. Let the person who's going through it just sit in their emotions and hear them out and say, look, it is shit. It's absolutely crap. You don't deserve it. You don't deserve any of this, but I'll be here for you. Don't talk about other people. Let them be in their emotions and feel with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, once they've come to terms with it, you can say, look, someone has, I know someone who's gone through this and they recommended X, Y, and Z. You can still talk about other people and their diagnosis, but let that person feel their emotions. If someone says they don't need any help, they do. They're probably just trying to be macho and do as much as they can for themselves.
Yeah.
So, for example, a couple of friends and family here, they would always ask, do you need anything? And I would say no. But friends would like drop around food, which was amazing, just to have it in the freezer so that mm-hmm. Before my parents got here, so that if I was at the hospital all day, it was easy to come home and throw something in the oven that was homemade. It wasn't takeaway or McDonald's or whatever you might eat. Another friend, I had flights. We were meant to go on holiday 2 weeks after to Lady Elliot Island. And it was this trip we had planned for a long time. A friend of mine says, right, give me your flight details. And she contacted Qantas to get me a return. She also contacted the gym to cancel. There are little things that you don't think about, but they need done and they need time and effort for people to do them.
Yeah.
So if the person says they don't need help, they do. Yeah. And just if you have that good of a relationship with them, just do things for them, make them dinner, clean their apartment, sort out their finances, contact their work, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. And you can just tell as well from the way you and Sean speak about each other online that your relationship is so strong and nothing can break you. And obviously you said yourself at the start that you're like soulmates. And I feel like everyone can see how much you both really love each other. But nobody can really prepare themselves for these types of situations of being sick and then seeing your partner so ill. How did it affect your relationship in terms of the new challenges you were both faced with and just adapting to a new normal? And how has Sean been through all of this?
You never expect at 29 your partner will shower you, wash your hair, plait your hair, you know, scrub your back, dry your feet, dress you, put stockings on your legs, dress your wound, like shave your head. You just don't expect that your partner will ever do that, especially at 29, maybe when you're 80 and you're looking after her. So I think in terms of the relationship, of course, there has been challenging times where we're obviously crying in each other's arms, or you know, I'm talking about dying and he has to obviously listen to what I'm talking about. But that 100% I would say our relationship is more stronger than it ever was, and I didn't think it could have got any stronger. He's obviously seen me at my worst, and he's been there every step of the way, and he hasn't shied away from it or you know said it was too hard for him or too difficult. You know, he'll just sit there and like let me cry on his shoulder for hours, and just nothing is ever too hard for him. But he's also very conscious of, you know, his mental health and how it has affected him. So he set up a mental health group just recently, actually down in Coogee, for men, just a men's mental health group called How's the Head. And you know, it's because he knows that when he was going through it, he got anxiety, he got stressed, he got really worked up, and he found it hard to speak to other people. So having that kind of channel will help him, obviously, and other people, but he'll also go and get, you know, speak to professionals, speak to counselors and whatever it may be. But I think it'll either make your relationship or break your relationship. Someone always said to me, if you can survive a relationship in Australia, you know, you're doing well, because people tend to come here and break up or do whatever. If you can survive each other during the lockdown, you'll either make it or you break it. But if you go through a lockdown, a pandemic, two cancelled weddings and a cancer diagnosis, then you're a bit indestructible, I think.
You're doing pretty good, like.
We're doing pretty well. And I mean, that's the way we've always been. And I feel like I'm the luckiest girl in the world having him with me the whole way through. And even my parents, you know, they said when I got diagnosed, like, we wouldn't want Martin to be with any other person rather than you, because it's just level-headed.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it'd be a bit different if he was a bit of a stress ball. You know, if he used to hit the pub to cope with stress and anxiety, I'm glad that he's not that type of person.
Yeah.
you know, he's a bit more, I'll go for a walk, I'll take the dog for a walk, or, you know, I'll go to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
I think the choices that he's made in life and the choices that I've made in life has helped us both work through this challenging time, and our relationship is definitely stronger.
Yeah. It's funny, like, you haven't been able to make your vows, even though you've tried twice, but you're already in the sickness and health type thing already, like, you know, you're already at that point. But the day that you finished your chemo and you rang the bell must have been such an emotional day for you after 5 long months of it. And even the video that Sean made was so beautiful and such an emotional tribute. Like, I think everyone was crying when they watched it. But describe how that milestone felt for you that day.
A bit unbelievable. Like, I couldn't believe that the time I come to ring that bell, because I walked past the bell every day I was getting chemo, and I had 16 sessions in total. And I remember looking at it going, oh my god, how am I ever going to get to the end of these 3 months and ring that bell? And then when it came to it, I was actually a bit afraid to ring the bell. I was like, oh god, like, I can't believe this is happening. And all the nurses come out and clap, and my parents, because you're not allowed in because of COVID, but to ring the bell, they allowed my parents and Sean in, because it's just literally at the door. They had just have a negative antigen test.
Right.
And I remember the day I got my final chemo, I thought, right, I'm going to wear my wig. I hadn't worn in so long, because the humidity in Sydney was just killing me deep inside. I'll wear my wig and, you know, I'll not get dressed up, but I'll make an effort on the last day. I'll put a bit of blusher on my cheeks. But when I got into the ward, I had been so, because I always want to walk to chemo and walk back as well, so I'd walked with my wig on, and my body temperature was obviously a bit high because of the wig. I was sitting there on the chair, and the nurse came over to take my blood pressure and take my temperature, and he said, oh, you've got a bit of a temperature there. I was like, no,
here we go.
I can't give you your treatment if you have a temperature. I need to check with the doctor. Also, your bloods are very low. They should be X marker, but they're this marker.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you have got to be kidding me. And literally within a second, I was like, wait, look, ripped my wig off. Like, got a my journal that was with me and started fanning myself down to try and bring my temperature down. I had my water bottle on the back of my neck. And I think he thought that I was a crazy lady. And I just says, I'm not leaving this chair. I'm not leaving this center until I get my last chemo. I says, I'm ringing that bell. Yeah. I was like a woman on a mission. I says, right, just relax for a bit. I'll ring the doctor and see what they say. So as soon as he'd left, I ran into the bathroom, cold water on my hands, like put it over my face. Sure, the blusher was everywhere. My wig was laying beside me in the chair. And it finally took my temperature, and of course it went down. And he says, right, we can proceed. Your bloods are low, but they're not dangerously low.
Yeah.
And then when I rang the bell, sometimes you just feel like your knees are very weak, like I was going to fall. And that's exactly how I felt. And then my mommy and daddy put their arms around me. Sean put his arms around everybody. And we all just literally cried, standing there, hugging, once I had the bell. And I just thought, thank God that is over. Yeah. Right. But it's like, as soon as that was over, I was like, right, what's next?
Yeah. And on the 2nd of the 2nd, 2022, you got your PET scan results. And for those listening who might not know, like, your story at all, just tell them what the results were on that day, which was so weird that it was that day.
Yeah, so 2222, which is a sign of, you know, angels and good things to come.
Mm-hmm.
PET scan was all clear. So basically, amazing. Shows no sign of uptake of disease in my body. I actually had to get the doctor to say it again. I was like, sorry, can you say that again? I wish I hadn't recorded the call, because right, can you say that again? Okay. And so it's all clear. Can you say that again? It's like, yes, you're all clear. Uh-huh. And Sean was listening. He had his ear to the other end of the phone, because we were down the coast at that time. And I remember he just started fist pumping behind me, like, yes, like, clear. And then my mommy started wailing like you've never heard before. She was wailing so loud that the nurse, the doctor on the phone, thought it was me crying. And she says, oh, are you okay? And I says, that's not me, my mommy crying. And then we all, and I swear, me, Sean, and mommy and daddy have had about 20 hugs where all four of us is just arms around everyone. that was literally the best day. Like, I couldn't have had any more better news than that.
Yeah. That is so cute. Like, and I feel like the four of you as well have become so close. Like, was Sean ever as close with your parents, or did they become way closer when they came over here?
So I'm lucky enough that my parents have been here twice before, and they've always stayed with me. And when they've come, it's been for at least 2 months. So they do have a good relationship.
Yeah.
But it definitely got stronger when they were here. And they could just see the type of person that he was and how he cared for me. And the videos that I would post of Sean beating up my mummy.
Yeah, so funny. Yeah.
You know, they started doing that when I was getting chemo because I'd be so sick. And, you know, just sitting on the sofa, like, all kind of rolled up with, like, a beanie on my head and pale. And he'd just turn around and start hitting her. And I would start laughing. Like, not actually hitting her, but, like, tickling her, whatever. And it made me laugh. And because I laughed, they just kept doing it. So every time I was a bit upset or whatever, tired, he just beat her up, just made me laugh. It was at her expense, obviously, but she loved me. But the relationship that everyone has is really good. And it's vice versa with Sean's family too. And even my parents and Sean's family, like, both are living in Belfast, and I'd say every 2 weeks or so, they'd call up each other and get a Chinese and stuff.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, which I feel very lucky about.
Mm-hmm. And so where are you at now, so in terms of your treatment and your health? So you said you're doing your radiotherapy now at the minute.
Yeah, radiotherapy. So I've done 24 sessions now. I've got four more to go. So this Friday finishes my active treatment.
Okay.
Which there's actually another bell in radiation I didn't know until I started radiation. So I have another bell to ring. And then I'll have my two surgeries, which I mentioned, my other mastectomy, and have my port removed. But I'll also be on hormone therapy for a couple of years after this. So that includes a monthly injection in the stomach, which keeps my ovaries asleep.
Okay.
And then I'll take a tablet every day for at least 5 years, minimum 5 years. And that just stops my body producing any hormones, which means I'll be in menopause state. So I'm in a menopause now, because I started those injections back in August when I started chemotherapy. And I'll continue in menopause for the next at least 5 years. So if anyone's listening and their mother or their auntie or their sister or anybody's going through menopause, be kind to them, because it's actually awful. Like, I'm actually taking a flush right now thinking about it.
Oh no.
The night sweats, like, luckily enough, I don't have many mood swings, but I know my mother got a lot of mood swings when she was going through it.
Yeah.
And just like a bit achy and painy here and there. But that's to protect me for the future. So because my cancer was eating off my hormones, by blocking my body producing any hormones, that is a way of controlling any reoccurrence or cancer coming back.
Okay. Right. And how are you feeling right now? Like, how do you feel health-wise?
Health-wise, I feel great. Back to the gym, training, all of the fluids that you would have had through chemo is finally starting to leave me, so I can get back into my jeans and stuff that I would have had, that would have fitted me before. Training, which is great. But it's one so thing good. I am conscious about is just the mental
of
side
course.
Of things.
Yeah.
And I can see where, you know, I've had a couple of wobbles the last couple of days where all I want to do, I just want to have a cry. And once I cry, I'm fine after that. But I'll say to Sean, like, I'm feeling a bit upset today. Like, I don't know why, but I'm just a bit, I just need to cry.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, right, we'll cry. So I'll literally be like crying as he said, because I feel like I can just like let it go. Because I know once I have to cry, I'm fine after that. But I do know that mentally I do need to, I want to continue my counselling sessions.
Of course, yeah.
And just making sure that I'm on top of everything,
because
that's where things get a lot of people, because I think generally people expect you just to bounce back and it doesn't happen. So I know not to put a lot of pressure on them myself. But at the same time, I feel like I'm doing pretty well. Like, I'm I'm training 5-6 days a week. So you know,
much.
Out every morning for sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
Cooking dinners every night. I'm actually surprising myself with how well I'm doing at the minute. And I just hope that it continues.
Yeah, please God, yeah. And so how has this whole experience shaped you as a person? Like, do you feel like you look at life differently now?
Oh yeah, 100%. Like yeah. I would normally be climbing the corporate ladder or, you know, in the rat race.
Yeah.
I used to get up at stupid o'clock to walk Bruno down to the beach, come up, get ready, go to work, be away for like 10 hours, go straight to the gym, not have dinner till like 8:30 at night time. So I think in terms of my lifestyle and my work-life balance will definitely change when I do return to work.
Yeah.
I think that I've had to put myself first, which I will continue to do at some degree, mm-hmm. and just making sure that things are, like I'm looking after myself, because if I'm not 100%, I can't help other people.
Yeah.
But I also feel like it's probably opened my eyes a bit in terms of a purpose in life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say that I was meant to get cancer and you know, this is the way my life is always meant to be, but I feel like what has happened and given the person that I am, there's definitely a different purpose there for me. And yeah. I think it's to help other people.
Yeah.
So whether I don't know what exactly that looks like, but I feel like I've helped a lot of people anyway, sharing the story, because it's encouraged people to get checked.
100%, yeah.
And a couple of girls have actually messaged me that have gone and got checked. And unfortunately they do have cancer because off their lump or whatever it may be, and other people have gone and it's been nothing, but at least they know it's nothing.
Yeah.
So I feel like I have helped other people, but I feel like there is a purpose, or I suppose your why,
mm-hmm.
as to why you're here on this earth and what you're meant to do with your life. But I have yet to work that out this year. I think this year I'll work out what is my purpose and what I'm meant to do, but I will continue to share my journey.
Yeah.
And share, you know, first of the month to check yourself, and all those little reminders to people that, you know, cancer doesn't discriminate. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't pick the old and the frail and the elderly people all the time.
Yeah.
Like young people can get it. And just about being self-aware of your body.
Mm-hmm. And have you and Sean decided on a date to finally tie the knot? And have your plans for the wedding changed at all as a result of your experiences? Like, are you going smaller? Or are you going bigger? Or is it staying the same?
We have no plans yet, mm-hmm. as in terms of the date.
Yeah.
I'd say my plan for the wedding has changed. I think it will be different now.
Yeah.
But again, what that looks like, I'm not too sure. I always planned on, I wanted a wedding in Europe somewhere where it's cheap enough for family to travel to and friends, but it's in the sun, because I'm such a,
yeah,
like I said, a bum. Like, I'd love a wedding somewhere in a real, you know, beautiful little church, and then have like food outside by the ocean or on a cliff or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that happens or not, I'm not quite sure. We could probably elope tomorrow. Like, I think I'm a bit radical with my decisions at the minute. So
yeah.
I won't say that this is exactly what we're going to do. But I think in terms of the actual wedding itself, things and elements will be different.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely will be different.
Martine, that's all my questions. Thank you so, so much for, first of all, sharing your story and being so vulnerable with everyone, because you're genuinely saving lives, like those two girls that you said that unfortunately have cancer. Like, would they have gone to get themselves tested if it hadn't been for you? Like, honestly, who knows? And look after yourself, and I hope you feel a lot better, and obviously look after your mind as well, most importantly. But thank you so much, and you're so lovely, you're so, so nice. So thank you so much for coming on as well and sharing your story.
Thanks for asking. And if I can help anybody, or if anybody listened to this or worried about a lump or whatever, mm-hmm. like, I might not answer messages right away, because I'm a bit slow in that space.
You're busy.
But if ever any questions or whatever, like, I'm more than happy to share as much information as possible,
yeah.
To message. And just remember that there are other people out there who have gone through cancer diagnosis and they're fine. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know, technology, research, everything nowadays is completely different. It's not a death sentence. Yes, it's going to be a tough couple of months ahead, but like, you will go through it.
Yeah, amazing. That is it for this week's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you would like to check out Martine's story on her Instagram page and give her a follow, her Instagram is at missmiss.dines, D-I-N-E-S. So give her page a follow and just check out her story. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and I will see you in the next one. Bye.